The cacophony of information around the coronavirus crisis highlights the importance of reliable data and good analysis of that data. This edition of Utah Thrives addresses that problem, as well as ways the crisis may change us and things we can learn from past crisis situations. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichardt. Almost 15 years ago, I watched a piece of American civilization fall into confusion. It was a city half destroyed. My own house was looted. This, of course, was the Katrina disaster in New Orleans. For better or worse, I watched it from the front row, working at a public policy organization whose organizational output overnight became about one topic, dealing with the disaster and its aftermath. With the impact surrounding the coronavirus, I was already thinking back to those dark days. Then, the March 18th earthquake hit the Wasatch Front, and a lot of what happened in New Orleans came flooding back. The earthquake and the coronavirus have not visited on Utah anything approaching the damage inflicted by the levee breaches in New Orleans. But there are lessons we can take away regardless as we grapple with crisis situations and try to armor up against future disasters. First of all, leadership matters. Thinking back to Katrina, both in the immediate response and in the aftermath, there were significant leadership failures at the federal, state, and local levels. The ability to provide clear direction and the willingness to take responsibility are critical qualities for leadership during a crisis. Along similar lines, coordination and prioritization are crucial. Following Katrina, the state of Louisiana launched a post-disaster planning effort. The mayor of New Orleans launched his own effort. Then, the city council, which didn't get along with the mayor, launched its own effort. And then private civic leaders, mainly foundations, responded to all this chaos and incoherence by launching still another effort. Then, out-of-state organizations parachuted in to push their pet projects, and they added to the cacophony. In the end, there was a lack of rational prioritization in the resulting planning documents. And from the public policy perspective, decision-making was impaired. And from the public's perspective, there was just noise. So really, all these efforts, which took up tremendous amounts of civic energy over a significant period of time, were largely useless. So here in this case, we seem to be seeing good coordination between the state and federal levels. We've actually seen various governors from the other side of the political aisle of the president actually complimenting the president's response and vice versa. He's been complimenting the governor's responses. And with that said, we're certainly not free from partisanship, at least at the federal level and in the news media. Elected officials and political hacks are using the crisis to score points, and we've even seen dueling relief plans in Congress. That, again, is at the federal level. But citizen responses have their own momentum, so it's important how we as citizens respond. Again, thinking back to the failures in leadership and planning after Katrina, it basically meant that individual citizens had to take control of their own destinies. They lost confidence in government, and so then they banded together. They began sharing information. Neighborhood groups became more important than ever. And in the end, the decisions that these individuals made drove the future. So while there is always a vital role for government to play, and we're seeing that unfold in front of us right now, the extent to which citizens and community groups can fill the gaps is going to be pivotal. By the way, those gaps will change rapidly. It's important to gather data on the needs and the gaps on an ongoing basis to help set priorities. The needs in the first week of a crisis will differ significantly from the second week, the sixth week, and so on. We see that realization of that in the plan that the state has just put out. The issues, of course, will range from the outward economic issues to inward personal issues. And just to pause for a second here, one thing to consider in all of this is the toll that this is going to take on individuals. Thinking back again to Katrina, I know a number of people who, on the one hand, I saw them become more heroic. They became less attached to material things. They saw what was important in their lives, what was truly important. But I also saw marriages destroyed. I saw people descending into drinking and depression. And certainly, if this current crisis lasts too long, or lasts for a long time, we're going to see a psychological toll on people. We're probably already having a psychological toll that is occurring, but that in itself becomes a public health concern. And that's an area where we may need to consider balancing the consequences of shutting down our economy long term with the public health consequences of allowing economic activity to resume. Mental health is a public health issue, and if people begin losing hope because their lives have been upended and their businesses destroyed or their jobs lost, then we will see mental health consequences and therefore public health consequences. It's a cliche, of course, to say that crisis and opportunity go together, but there is truth to the notion. Certainly, a crisis will reveal the weaknesses in a system. And when that happens, the proper response is to make sure we become more resilient by addressing those weaknesses. A crisis can also have kind of a clean slate effect. In New Orleans, Katrina actually opened the way for major reforms in all kinds of areas that weren't directly related to the disaster, areas ranging from public education to government contracting to urban planning. Part of the reason for that is that it shook up the status quo, and certainly we're in a moment where our status quo is being shaken as a nation and as a world. But just as there are opportunities in a time of crisis, opportunities to improve things, there will also be opportunists. This could be special interest groups using the crisis to push agendas. We're seeing this at the federal level. This could be profiteers seeking to manipulate policy to enrich themselves. And it could be people taking advantage of people that are vulnerable as a result of the crisis. In Louisiana, more than a few business people and public officials went to jail for crossing legal lines in the Katrina aftermath. I mean, if you think about the mayor of New Orleans who went to jail for taking a bribe from a recovery contractor. That's just one example. We've already seen political opportunism, at least at the federal level, where the coronavirus relief package fell prey to threats of partisan wish lists, questions about prioritization. We had one congressman even telling colleagues that the crisis is, as he put it, a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. This brings to mind legislation that was introduced by one of Louisiana's senators in response to Katrina. I can still recall sitting in my evacuation exile in the weeks after Katrina hit and reading through the bill and realizing that it was largely a conglomeration of wish list bills that were meant to enrich special interests and that had clearly been written by lobbyists. And actually, some of it appeared to have been written well before the disaster struck. Another thing we're going to have to deal with going forward, we've already been dealing with certainly on the public health front, is red tape. So you have policies that have been crafted and put together in an air-conditioned office in Washington, D.C., once a crisis hits, don't really work well. You look at New Orleans, where it took years to negotiate settlements with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And New Orleans still languishes all these years later with incomplete projects that were designated for FEMA funding. So it's important for government to make sure that they have in place really competent administrators that are good at wading through the red tape. And consultants, in some cases, may help to navigate the red tape and ensure that there are effective and energetic responses. Now, let's turn to the reactions to coronavirus. They're ranging from prudence to panic, and we can debate which reaction fits where. Regardless of where you fall on the spectrum, and leaving aside the economic issues and the public health issues, there are a lot of ways that this virus is going to change the way we live and operate. It became a regular part of the language in New Orleans after Katrina, in which the world was described as pre-Katrina and post-Katrina. Things were never the same, and we will see something similar as a result of this coronavirus. The events in motion now will change certain things forever. One of the things to consider is the way the crisis is exposing businesses, government agencies, and just vast portions of the population to new ways of working. Right now, Utah Foundation, with support from UCARE, has been working on a study of telecommuting, set to release later this year. Well, the sudden shift to telecommuting, which is a condition under which Utah Foundation staff has been working, so we're living it firsthand, but that shift is going to cast new light on our study as the virus forces a range of enterprises into this large-scale telecommuting experiment. For some businesses, for some government agencies, it may actually hasten a move to telecommuting that they were already considering. I think we're also going to discover limitations to telecommuting that maybe we haven't considered, and advantages to in-person work that maybe we have underestimated. Along the same lines, the virus crisis may change the way we meet. Obviously, in-person meetings and gatherings have been canceled across the board, from international conferences to community get-togethers to one-on-one meetings even. One businessman I spoke with a couple of weeks ago mentioned that travel for in-person meetings in his company was already excessive, and he's realized that his company should have moved to more online meetings anyway. But, you know, again, the experience may reinforce the importance of face-to-face interactions as well, as we discover the limitations of these online gatherings. The virus may also change the way we learn. With student debt burdens and the cost of higher education already a concern, pressure has been growing for post-secondary institutions to increase offerings of online classes, partly as a means of lowering costs or offering education at a lower cost. Well, here again, a mass experiment is now underway. We've got higher education institutions sending students home to learn exclusively online. For some institutions, this experience may open new vistas and opportunities. For some students, it may open the way for new preferences. Utah Foundation is currently working on a series of reports looking at how Utah can boost post-secondary attainment levels, and certainly an expanded range of flexible online opportunities may be an important part of the picture, at least for certain segments of our population. Meanwhile, at the K-12 level, a mass experiment in homeschooling is suddenly underway. As a result of this, some schools may realize new opportunities to use technology to better reach students. Others may be uncovering the negative effects of overexposure to the technology and to the internet. Some parents may decide that permanent homeschooling through online programs is worth pursuing for their kids, having been forced to try their hand at it right now. Naturally, our hygiene standards are changing. We're in the process of creating stronger habits as to hand washing and the like. Businesses and institutions are putting a greater emphasis on cleanliness, and this is not entirely going to change. Turning to government, the coronavirus is going to change the way governments operate. Governments right now are taking unprecedented measures across the world. They're using public health authority to an unprecedented degree, and as a result, there are bound to be ripple effects. On the one hand, some governments might feel emboldened as a result of this event. they might begin to expand their authority more generally. On the other, if the public feels that the authority their government has taken turns out to have been overreach in some respects, turns out to have been inappropriate in some respects, it could actually inspire new levels of public distrust of government authority. But really, right now, what's in front of us is something on a more mundane level, which is really depending on the economic pain and the speed of recovery, governments may see an increased need to bolster reserves and rainy day funds in the future. One of the questions I've been hearing quite a bit from government entities is, what does this do to our revenues? And right now they're flying blind, in part because they don't know how long the impacts will last or how deep the revenue impacts will be. But with all that said, and even taking into account concerns that might be out there about government authority being used inappropriately in some way, we do see that there is being revealed a new potential for cooperation. So if we look at it, if government entities and citizens are able to cooperate and come together and take reasonable, individualized, and subsidiary actions toward common goals, in this case, we may discover and unlock new potential for cooperating on other worthy endeavors. Beyond all that, there are a number of questions sitting out there. One is, what will the effect be on the trend towards globalization? Will this whole crisis ultimately throw cold water on that push? Obviously, China being such an important trading partner for the United States and now being seen fairly or unfairly as the source of this particular crisis, the question has to be asked, how are we going to react going forward economically to our international relationships, particularly just watching the global spread of the virus and how ultimately countries have had to go on lockdown in order to take the measures that they thought were most effective. Another big issue, and it's an issue very close to the heart of what Utah Foundation is about, is the reliability of data. Getting a handle on what data is worth listening to is important right now and will be important going forward. And unfortunately, there's wide variation among people that are actually well qualified to make predictions. Another question, therefore, comes up. What is the effect of this crisis on future virus responses? Does this become a once every few years exercise as the next virus emerges that we don't know too much about? Do we have a similar lockdown? Does international travel grind to a halt? Do people begin working from home? Do we begin to see the layoffs? One thing we know for sure is that it is easy, and we have seen evidence of this, for our health systems to become overwhelmed if we don't flatten the curve in response to this particular virus. This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org. Thanks for listening.